are you on the call with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh,
good afternoon.
Good morning. You're on the West Coast.
Well, you know, you might have heard yesterday, but we actually have people in Thailand and Australia and Great Britain, so it's different times of day everywhere.
Yeah, exciting.
So, Linda, is your presentation's about 20 minutes. So after that, we're going to open up for questions. So please start to note different things that Linda is going to present with you today so that you can have a question ready for her. Linda Fries is an artist whose path took her into nature, where she abandoned commercial art materials for an exploration of the natural world and all it could offer. And what she offers you today is completely altruistic and comes from her deep caring for our beautiful blue-green planet Earth. Linda, you have no idea how grateful I am personally that you agreed to be with us today. Welcome.
Thank you, and it's always exciting for me to speak with artists. Do I now press the star 5?
You don't need to. I've done that for us.
Oh, okay. So, again, thank you very much, and I am really happy to speak with artists wherever I can. I'm here to talk about you, the Earth, and toxic art. What you don't know can hurt you. Most of your speakers have given you great ideas for promoting your vision and your work. For my presentation, I'm going to shift the focus to a different, very concrete issue, the materials we use to make our art. I've been an artist for over 30 years and active in the environmental movement for over 30 years. But until 10 years ago, I did not bring these two worlds together. So today I'm going to share with you some concerns I have explored about the nature of our materials and the state of our Earth. We artists can care for the Earth both by the subjects we address and the actual materials we use. The water, the air, the soil, everything in the natural world is affected by what we make. Unfortunately, the problem for artists, especially environmentally conscious artists, is that art materials are among the most toxic consumer products available on the market today. When I speak with artists, I usually start by asking these two questions. The first is, have you been concerned about toxins in the art materials that you use? And almost universally, artists say yes. The second question, have you or a friend experienced ill health effects as a result of the art materials that you use? And usually about a fifth to a quarter artists will raise their hands or say yes. Actually, in response to artists' demands, toxins in studio materials have been reduced, but the manufacture, distribution, and disposal of most art materials still cause ecological harm. As artists, we need to become more aware of the nature of our materials and the possible harm that our art-making activities can cause. My friend, Joe Hansen, who is a well-known environmental artist and pioneer in the recycled art movement, came up with the term earth-safe to describe the ideal art materials. What are earth-safe art materials? Truly earth-safe art materials can be used without causing harm to any living system. Most art materials fail this standard. How can we find ones that meet it? Just like you can now buy organic food in most markets, someday, hopefully, you should be able to easily choose organic, earth-safe art materials in any art store. We are still far from this goal. Some materials are clearly marked as potential hazards. Other products state that they are non-toxic. Still others, like mat board, foam core, plexiglass, papers, plastics, canvas, and packaging, are unmarked but may carry known, unknown, or hidden environmental costs. Can we use these items without concern? And what does the word non-toxic really mean? Real improvements have been made in many products for art, but the label non-toxic still leaves many unanswered questions. Read your product labels carefully. For example, a typical label on a non-toxic product states, quote, based on toxicological review, there are no acute or known chronic health hazards with anticipated use of this product. Parentheses, most chemicals are not fully tested for chronic toxicity. Always protect yourself against potentially unknown chronic hazards of this and other chemical products by keeping them out of your body. End quote. Other non-toxic labels highlight that the concerns about hazards are focused on human health as in this label, quote, this product is certified by a medical expert to contain no material in sufficient quantities to be toxic or injurious to humans, end quote. Now here's the really big question. What about the effects of so-called non-toxic artist materials on all other life forms sharing the Earth with us? After all, humans and other life forms are all in one big web of interactive life. So this really is one of the central problems. How can we expand our awareness and concerns beyond the studio to include all life systems, not just us? And just how big is this problem? In answer to that question, there is a very fine book I often recommend to artists. It is called Cradle to Cradle by Michael Brongart and William McDonough. In this book, the authors say that of the approximately 80,000 defined chemical and technical mixes that are produced and used by industries today, each of which has five or more byproducts, only about 3,000 so far have been studied for their effects on living systems, end quote. Thus, the effects on the earth of most of the synthetic chemicals and conventional paints, dyes, solvents, finishes, personal care products, household cleaners, furnishings, building materials, even toys, etc., are unknown and in many cases untraceable. It's amazing, but just this morning in today's San Francisco Chronicle, there is an article about a toxic chemical that is commonly found in children's plastic toys and in food containers. This is what the article says. When parents first hear that some plastics may be a threat to their children's health, their initial reaction is often disbelief. Quote, surely the government tests these materials thoroughly for safety. No, it doesn't. Then when they learn that a common compound of plastic toys and food containers, bisphenol A, has been shown by many studies to cause harmful effects, they respond, quote, surely these impacts are because of high doses and not what my child would encounter. No, they're not high. The doses used were in the range of common human exposure. I also was really surprised when I first learned how unprotected we are by our government from toxic chemicals. Each year, hundreds of new chemicals are created and incorporated into products we use, but very few have had even a preliminary screening for health impacts and environmental impacts. This information might seem rather discouraging to you. How can we respond to the known and unknown hazards of toxins, of materials? We can demand environmental accountability and pressure art stores and manufacturers to change. We can begin by asking questions. I've come up with four questions for you artists to consider. First, does the manufacture, dispersal, use, and disposal of an art product cause harm to the earth? Secondly, how can we greatly reduce or eliminate unknown toxic hazards in the art world? Third, how can we demand development of earth-safe products? And fourth, how do we take responsibility, not just for studio safety, but also for the health and well-being of others and of all life forms? Now, many people think that we artists are few in number, and our use of some questionable materials doesn't matter much. Perhaps we should reconsider. According to one survey I read, over 10% of the American public identify themselves as artists, amateur or professional, and each of us counts. Are we providing a good example of environmentally responsible art making? What can we do to improve? Acting together, so many artists can make a difference, and our demands for change will be heard. And in response to the requests I get from artists, I've put together some guidelines for earth-safe art materials. But before I get into this subject, I should tell you that the authors of Cradle to Cradle, the book I recommended, are convinced that everything we use and make can be reformulated to cause no harm to the earth. That's the good news. So with that in mind, here are some guidelines for you to think about in making your own art. Remember, as I said earlier, truly earth-safe art materials can be caused without, can be used without causing harm to any living system. Unfortunately, most art materials contain hidden, man-made chemicals, some of which are potentially harmful to the environment. Ideally, each art product would be required to list all ingredients, indicating which ones are known to be damaging. However, this is not the case. At this time, the best that artists can do who wish to follow an earth-safe practice is to use the most natural, biodegradable, least synthetic materials for their work. When using man-made materials, if you are curious, you can contact the manufacturer to request an accounting of the processes and chemicals involved in production. I have done this. And you may discover, as I did, that the manufacturer does not really know all the components of the product. Some are produced in other locations, and most of the chemicals and processes themselves have never been studied or had even a preliminary screening for environmental impact. Perhaps you remember Aaron Brockovich's story, so brilliantly portrayed by Julia Roberts in the film of the same name. This housewife became convinced, with the high rates of disease in her factory town, she became very concerned about this, and she fearlessly confronted the polluting utility company. But first, before she could stop the ongoing, dangerous environmental and human devastation, she and her neighbors had to prove that these chemicals were the source of disease of so many residents. In a better world, we will follow the precautionary principle, a rule that insists that before any new chemical or process is approved and put into use, it will be the manufacturer's burden to prove that it does not cause harm to humans or the earth. By the way, a form of this law has already been put into place recently in Europe. And in the U.S., we need to do some catch up on this. We can look forward to a time when hopefully everything we use and make can be reformulated to cause no harm to the earth. But until that time of environmental enlightenment has arrived, what can the earth-conscious artist do? Well, right now, given our limited ability to know, we can still make wiser choices. And where more earth-safe art materials are not available, we can advocate for change. It is interesting to note that in a related field of the arts, architecture, there already has been some progress towards awareness and change in this direction. In fact, you might look to architectural resources for some of your art-making materials, especially for natural earth-safe paints and building materials. Architects even have magazines focusing entirely on earth-safe materials. We should do the same. Well, when you're looking for earth-safe art materials, here's a suggestion. Look for paper products marked non-chlorinated, recycled, post-consumer, even paper products not made from trees. All of these are easier to find than even 5 years ago in your art store. Look for organically grown cotton products, such as mat boards made of organic cotton or canvas or cotton rag papers. By the way, I throw that in, but still impossible to find that. And many of you may well know that growing non-organic cotton is one of the more toxic agricultural practices today. Look for natural earth-safe pigments, paints, and dyes in natural earth-safe bases. Now, for this, you can actually look on the internet, and there are many sources. Look for sustainably harvested wood for frames and sculpture. And here, you're just beginning to be able to find some distributors that do work in sustainable woods for their frames. Look again on the internet. Also, think of other natural earth-safe materials for your sculpture and your ceramics. Check for environmentally appropriate packaging. And remember, even with natural materials, the artist must observe safe studio practices. And as an aside, I'm going to recommend to you an excellent book on safe studio practices for all artists. It is quotes the artist's complete health and safety guide. That's the artist's complete health and safety guide by Monona Rosol, R-O-S-S-O-L. So as much as possible, artists should avoid any materials that obviously cannot be recycled or composted. This may include a wide range of plastics, packaging, foam core, mylar, etc. And to be truly earth safe, if you can't compost it, you shouldn't use it. At this stage, I'll share with you some of the steps I've made towards creating earth safe art. Later, some of you other artists listening who use environmentally conscious materials may want to tell us what you use and why. Out of concern for the impact of unknown, potentially dangerous man-made chemicals in art products, I have chosen to make art by painting with natural ingredients. I use the natural pigments of the earth, which I find in my neighborhood, true local color that I then grind and mix with the sap of trees. They're painted on cotton and framed in wood. My work can be safely composted, earth to earth. Through these methods, I model alternatives for artists and others concerned about how we make things. For your own practices, you may be wondering that in the face of such large unknown problems, what can you do? In addition to choosing earth-safe materials as much as possible, you can work together with other artists. Envision changes in your local art community. Brainstorm as a group. How might these be accomplished? Visit your local art stores and inquire about their products. Do they carry earth-safe products? How can you encourage them to do more? Work with local art organizations and schools to raise awareness of these issues. Organize an exhibition for artists using earth-safe materials. I really like the idea of having more exhibitions around the country and the world that would highlight and promote the possibilities that there are for our art with earth-safe materials. And much more. You can advocate for change in the larger art world. Brainstorm again with your group on possible ways to do so, including contact with and pressure on art product manufacturers, art stores, art catalog companies, and art magazines, and encourage these magazines to use recycled earth-friendly papers. My final recommendation for working for change is to join an environmental or eco-art organization. Two excellent sites on the internet for information about ecological art are the Green Museum and Eco Art Space. I personally am active with a third organization, one called WEED, that is W-E-A-D, the Women Environmental Artists Directory. This directory was started 10 years ago by two well-known environmental artists, Joe Hansen and Susan Leibowitz-Steinemann. This directory includes over 200 listings of eco artists from all over the U.S. and beyond. We are open to women arts professionals, and we really encourage people from all over the world who would like to join us to do so. And our professionals work with ecological issues, including reclamation and recycling, studio issues, public venues, conceptual and functional art, ecofeminism, bioregionalism, ecological education, etc. And your listing is completely free. Our purpose is to provide access to information to artists, curators, writers, art and public art administrators, educators in art and ecology, and to facilitate networking among eco-artists. In our brief 10 years of existence, we have sponsored a number of eco-art conferences and forums and a number of shows. You can access our website at www.weedartists.org. So the intent of my talk today is to inspire you as artists to think about our responsibility to the environment and ways we can begin to meet it. In the web of life, whatever harms the earth eventually hurts us too. too. But before I take questions, I would like to conclude with my favorite quote from Will McDonough. He says, if what we make with our hands is to be sacred and honor the earth that gives us life, then the things that we make must not only rise from the ground, but return to it, soil to soil, water to water, so that everything that is received from the earth can be freely given back without causing harm to any living system. Now I look forward to hearing from you with your questions, responses, suggestions, and descriptions about your own earth-safe concerns and art practices.
Linda, this is Ariane.
Hi, Ariane.
I just have to tell you that I'm not prone to tears a lot these days, but I'm just a little bit moist-eyed here because you really touched my heart with that, especially that last quote.
Yeah.
Now I want to bring this back. I'm going to exercise my executive position here and ask the first question, because I want to bring this for artists back full circle to some of the other material that they've been listening to. And I want to ask you a question about how connected, how much cross-fertilization is happening between the eco-art movement and other environmental organizations that are on the national screen.
That's just an excellent question. In fact, our organization, WEED, is actively involved with the Bioneers Conference. I don't know how many of your artists are familiar with this, but it is a gathering annually, and it happens in San Rafael, of scientists and philosophers and politicians and the leading thinkers from all over the world who are activists, who are doing work to promote environmental change. And it's something that our WEED group works with every year. We put up art shows and panels and host conversations, speakers, within the context of this major, major environmental proceeding that goes on annually. So in that way, we are actually in contact and working with many, many environmental people, from the scientists to the activists. And in our, if you go to our webpage or get our directory, which we would love for people to pick up a copy, in that, if, as you leaf through and see the many, the several hundred artists that we have in there, many of them work directly with governments. For example, in China, there's an artist working doing water reclamation issues in Beijing. In this country, Susan Steinman, whom I mentioned earlier, has been working with the National Park Service and scientists doing projects with local communities for reclamation of devastated lands. So this has been one of our goals, is to work collaterally with many of the people in the environmental movement.
Okay, so that was actually, I cheated. It's actually a question with two parts.
Okay.
So the second part is this. How savvy, how well is this community and this network using the internet? And I'm thinking especially, does the WEED have a blog that's on their website? Does this BioNews conference have a website and a blog? How much are these groups taking advantage of what I'm calling the new world paradigms to get the word out there?
With the Bioneers Conference, it is very much on the web, and they do sponsor actually weekly radio programs around issues of concern with the environment and every other discipline, including the arts.
Okay.
So they have a large staff and quite a bit of funding.
Okay.
Our WEED organization is entirely volunteer. We have 10 women who do all of the organizational jobs. We just met last night, and in fact, in answer to that, Judith Blankman, one of our very fine artists, does all of our web work. Initially, we had a very interactive website, and she simply, with her other paying job, could not keep up with it. So at the moment, you can pick up a lot of information from our website about artists and different concerns that we have, but you will not be able to interact with us in that way.
Okay, because I'm thinking for artists on the line who are interested in this whole area,
yes,
that one of the ways you can make use of some of this information is this can be an area where you craft an expertise. and you create a blog and you get out the word, and especially about your work, you're going to have a really large audience and potential collectors within this larger community of environmentally concerned consumers.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an excellent point.
So I just wanted to drop that one in. Okay,
yeah.
Now here we go. We're going to please everyone hit *6 if it will mute you, not if it will unmute you. And then I'm going to give everybody a couple of seconds here to hit *6, except for those of you who have a question for Linda. 1, 2, 3, here we go.
Linda?
Yes.
Just say your name so I can acknowledge you.
Okay. Hi, this is Diana Fritzler in Colorado.
Hi, Diana. Go ahead with your question.
My mediums are oil painting and encaustic. And as you were speaking, I got online and Googled some environmentally safe pigments that you had spoken about, safe
mm-hmm.
pigments and natural pigments,
mm-hmm.
and not that much came up in terms of specific direction to paint brands and mediums that are non-toxic as well as non-toxic mediums for encaustic. Do you have a source that is specific about what artist supplies are safe and what are not?
It's really a very gray area. In my using earth pigments, I figure what I'm doing is I'm not adding new, unknown, dangerous chemicals to the earth. Needless to say, in our natural earth pigments, we also have cadmium and lead and mercury and things, but at least I'm not adding to the burden with unknown things. So if you go with pigments that are natural pigments, and actually when I look on the web, there are some of the sources that I've used are there. So I think you can look again and see. You could also email me directly, and I'd be willing to give you brand names or
Linda, could you give some keywords that might be useful to do the search?
Earth pigment paints, so it works very well, as does with the wood I used natural wood frames or something like that, and I was able to come up with answers in both. But earth pigment paints will give you that. And I'm very happy if you wish to contact me directly to give you some of the names.
And you can always, send it to me and I'll just forward it straight to her.
But then we're talking about other issues, which is which chemicals that they've come up with are actually benign versus those that aren't. And I think you could tell from my talk that really very little research has been done on which things are toxic that are man-made chemicals. So we're in a very gray area here. As far as mediums, certainly the oil paints that you're using are coming with the natural, the mediums you use and the oil itself is all natural. Same is true with watercolors. And encaustic, you're also using a natural process there. But in some of the more contemporary, especially the newer things, there are, for example, in acrylic paint, there are over 30 different things added to each paint tube. fillers and facilitators and dryers, and there are so many different kinds of chemicals in each tube of paint, and we don't know because they're almost all untested. Are some of them endocrine disruptors or, causing more cancer rates? And once they're created, they go back into our natural earth system somehow. So those are areas that are of concern.
Okay, hang on. I muted us, so I'm going to go back and unmute us. Diana, did that answer your question for you?
Yes, it gave me some other references to
turn. Excellent.
So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Great. Someone else have a question for Linda?
This is Suzanne in Colorado also. I'm curious, Linda, obviously earth-friendliness is important, but one of the other considerations that I can think of is archival quality, and I'm wondering what you say to people that ask about paper and mm-hmm. and paints that are naturally made. Obviously, the masters started with many naturally made surfaces, but do you have a response to them if you ever get that question?
There's so many responses I can think of. It's a very real concern. I'm glad you brought it up. And I think of cave paintings in the 30, 40,000 years that they've made it. So I think that we can find ways of making archival art that will be long-lasting. The issues I was mentioning with paper, cotton paper especially, has to do with the way cotton is made. And how they actually make these archival, I'm not entirely sure. I know it has something to do with the chemical. So it may be it's very possible to make them archival once you've got the cotton organic, which is not available right now in art papers that I use. One of the things I strive for is to do as much as possible. I don't think it's possible right now for us as artists to be, unless you're just working outside with nature and building stone sculptures, to be entirely pure. So to do the best we can and then to advocate for change and to also advocate for information, like how is this made archival, what kind of chemicals go into that, can this be altered? I really go back to this book, Cradle to Cradle, that I mentioned earlier. Bill McDonough is an architect and Michael Braungott is a scientist, chemist. And I want to believe that when they say we can do everything we want to do without causing harm, I want to believe that's true and certainly head in that direction. So at this point, with your archival concerns, you're going to have to use what's available and maybe start calling manufacturers and asking questions, as I've done.
Can I ask a question?
You absolutely may. Who's speaking?
Doris Olson.
Yes, Doris.
Well, it seems to me right now that it's in the disposal of some of these paints, and I have heard from time to time, you know, about not dumping it down your sink. And I think it's up to us maybe to go to the garbage people and ask what we can do with these. With these
you raise
leftover.
A very good. Where do you live, Doris?
I live in Northern California.
You raise a very good point. In San Francisco, we actually have a toxic waste site, and paints are considered candidates for that. In fact, we're asked all our household paints and any other the art paints that we use to dispose of them in that fashion. In fact, I have a studio at Hunter's Point, which is a large art complex studios in San Francisco, and we are required to dispose of our paint in an earth-friendly way by putting it into the toxic waste disposal site.
Okay.
And that's something you certainly could call your disposal company and, you know, say this is a very important issue.
I think most of us probably do have that, you know, but we just haven't been doing it, that's all. And,
yes,
you know,
you're absolutely right.
You can still dump it. So
right.
Even though they have toxic waste sites, so it's really up to us to do it.
Mm-hmm. Is there another question on the line?
Yes, I had a question.
Who's speaking?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Who's speaking, please?
This is Shayla Perot Newcomb from Canada.
Yes, welcome.
I wanted to know, when I was looking about the earth pigment paint, what I came up with was mixing guides and such. So does that mean that you have to make the paints yourself to get an earth-friendly product?
Not entirely. There are some companies now coming out with already mixed paints.
What is that?
What?
Excuse me. Does somebody know who's got themselves? Who's that background noise coming from? Okay, I'm going to mute so you can answer this more fully. Hold on. Okay, go ahead, Linda.
Okay, I was telling Shayla that there are there's at least one company I know of and where you do not have to make your own paint. They have already mixing, and it looks like there's some in Europe as well. So, again, when you go for natural earth pigments on art on the Internet, you will find these companies.
Great. I'm going to ask the artist online again to please check out. There's a gentleman in somebody's background who is talking. I don't know if they're talking to the artist or somebody else. But if there's some gentleman in your environment that might be talking, could you please make sure you hit star 6? Here we're going to go and take another question. Hold on. Okay, go ahead. Do we have another question?
Hello?
Hello, yes. Who's speaking, please?
Oh, me. You're talking to me?
Yes, I am. What's your name?
Well, my name is Paul Galschneider from Nantucket Island. I'm an oil painter. I'm just listening. I didn't post our sex, but...
Do you have a question for Linda?
Not right now, actually.
Okay, so why don't you hit star six?
Okay.
And you can finish listening with us.
Okay, hold on.
Sure. Are there any other questions out there? Okay. If there are no more questions, I'm going to put us back on mute. Hold on. Linda, thank you so much. It is really incredible to hear this information. I've known it to be true, and I have not had specifics before, so I really thank you for that.
Welcome, and I look forward to the changes that will be coming in the art world in response to these issues as they become more well-known.
Each time you offer another group of artists this information, you know, the circle gets wider and wider, so it's really fantastic that you're so willing to do this. Thank you.
And thank you, Ariane, for the
opportunity. Have a good rest of the day. Okay, it's a little early, but we're going to take our break, and we'll still come back at 2:45. Let's see, it's 2:24. I'm so bad at this on clocks, but I guess it's a little less than 20 minutes that we're going to come back online, and I'm going to be talking with all of you this afternoon about artist statements and take your questions also. So have a good time during the break. Get refreshed, you know. Put your feet up or down, shake out the clutter, come back. You won't lose anything if you get in a little late because everything's recorded and you've got all those handouts. See you in about 20 minutes, and we'll just keep rolling along.